Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and this is one of those podcasts today that people say, Devin, you do what? You own and operate a window and door company, but you spend a majority of your time talking about the global megaphone podcast, bringing people together in the art of construction. And today we're going to go down, we're going to have this journey of this is one of those guys that the punchline in the middle of this whole thing is we were sitting at dinner and I've been at many of these conferences and I say what I do and they say, what do you do during the day? And I do that. And this guy looked at each other and we're like, what? We're sitting here at this AEC integration summit and we both do windows and doors. And so we're going to unpack that today. But the main message is really lessons learned leading up with Project Health Metrics at the AEC Integration Summit in 2024, moving into 2025. And there's what Jackson talked about a lot is that there's so many resources being driven into innovation, but should it be wider than technology? And I'm really excited to unpack that around this vertical of the keeping up with the Project Health Metrics and how this benefits you is that he really talks about how there may be a lot more solutions that are a lot more simple than you think. And I'm honored to have Nathan Wood all tying this stuff together, who is our guest co-host on all these podcasts, linking them together, who is our master facilitator in the art of construction and the founder of the Construction Progress Coalition, leading all these conversations in and out of the AEC Integration Summit. So from my perspectives, the big thing about this whole conversation today is that we have to pause for the cause. And I joke when I say pause for the cause because I had the honor of sharing podcasts with the one and only Jeff Semple, and he talks a lot about pausing for the cause. And I'm going to just leave it at that, and you can go back and listen to all these different things. But at the end of the day, we're going to talk about how do you keep your team healthy. And the other thing is Jackson and Nathan are going to all weaving this stuff together about running a small company, i.e. windows and doors that I talked about, while connecting so many different corporate connections of where blasts from the past all come together and talking through the reality of trying to keep the lights on and say no when it doesn't fit your culture, which sometimes can be hard as we talk about the riches and the niches. So with that being said, I want to pass it over to Nathan and get his perspectives of this awesome conversation we're going to have with Jackson.
Man, I am super excited. And yes, pause for the cause. Definitely, if you haven't listened to Jackson's interview on Contech Crew, definitely check that one out as well. But I think Jackson and I, we're definitely cut from the same cloth, come from the DPR construction, kind of that both lean and technology, which has historically been oil and water. So kind of excited to get into that. And really, his excitement around excited about mental health is kind of sounds weird to say, but we'll dig into a lot of kind of the humanistic side of innovation, and just really excited to dig in. I know Charlie's has been big, has been on the podcast before, and I know Charlie and Jackson go way back, so it's a lot of small world connections. So excited to dig into that, learn more, and share it with the world.
Awesome. Well, without further ado, let's jump in and get to know Jackson's story and have as much fun as possible. What's your favorite beverage?
So thinking about this, I'm going to go two beverages, one alcoholic, one non. I think gin and tonic with an orange slice. That's my go-to drink. And then I think non-alcoholic have to be a Thai tea.
Awesome. Well, I'm diving deep into the gin thing. I've been making different spirits and learning all about that stuff. And the more I learn, the more I'm fascinated by gin on, what the different little subtleties you can do of how much it can change. And like you said, what items you put in that with it, right?
Yeah. It's my cousin works at a distillery, and she blew my mind with a fact about gin. And I won't quote her directly because I can't remember the numbers, but apparently gin has, out of any spirit, the most diverse flavor profiles of any other spirit. It can, you start sampling them. No one of them tastes the same. So it's more complex than people think. Get away from the beef eater and try some new stuff if you haven't.
There you go. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled, Jackson.
I think favorite place to travel, probably Vieques, Puerto Rico. Went down there when I in my early 20s and just had a blast with the family. Beautiful, easy to access Caribbean, but still can get there without a passport.
Beautiful. Give us one story from that.
I was 19, so it wasn't legal age to drink yet in the U.S., but you could drink there. Buddies and I had all gone out with my dad, and we practiced to go sing karaoke, and we were practicing to harmonize and go do this awesome karaoke, and we get up there and just was not the right crowd for singing the Eagles. ended up having a blast anyways, and we put on a great performance to the surprise of the audience, who did not enjoy our take, but we had a blast, and the locals were great. So
awesome. Well, what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah. I'd say golf is a hobby, but I think that's connected to construction because I think a lot of people do. But honestly, cooking is my favorite hobby. One of my first passions since a child was wanted to get in the restaurant business, learn to cook. So I started learning to cook from a young age, and just love cooking. So
awesome. Well, let's jump into this. But tell us your story that led you to being the head of operations at Double Hung Historic Window Restoration. And at the intro, I talked about how I've met a lot of people at different conferences when you've went out my comfort zone, and having dinner when I got to meet you at the AEC Integration Summit. Can you tie that in as well?
Yeah, I think so. So like I mentioned, early on, my passion was culinary arts or music. I come from a musical family. Grandfather was a band director. So I always thought that I'd either be doing one or the other, playing music, producing music. That was what my first degree was in. That's what was my first passion. But around the same time that I started kind of really thinking about careers was, high school, middle school. My dad had started Double Hung out of our garage and kind of just was helping neighbors, had a real small business in this niche. And I gave it a go to try and focus and take music, realized that, had this opportunity for, a growing business that was in construction, which I wasn't really interested in. I didn't really have any passion for getting into skilled trades. I'd just kind of grown up around it. Dad and I had a conversation when I was 21 after, I'd gone through a traumatic brain injury, had a pivotal moment in my life, and kind of had a moment of clarity that, maybe the music I was meant to make was in the skilled trade and construction industry. So that's where I got a degree in construction management, went to learn how to build, worked for two different GCs, one more traditional regional builder that taught me a lot of great things on how to build. And the other led me to DPR, where I, what led me to DPR was actually I'd listened to the Contact Trio. I was really wanting to figure out innovation. The builder I was with didn't really place a lot of emphasis on technology, BIM modeling, no technology. It's like, we built it this way. This is how we're going to build it. We don't need all that. And I wanted to learn and grow. So I learned about DPR through the Contact Trio, went down some rabbit holes, and it's like, I want to be doing construction and technology. So went and worked with them out of Charlotte. That's ultimately kind of how I got connected with this ecosphere. Spent years doing that with the angle of coming back to learn how big companies manage projects, manage their people, grow their people. Middle of the pandemic, I was just getting ready to top out my first mid-rise structure, which is a dream of mine to build something, multi-stories ground up, not multi-stories, 25 stories. I was about a month and a half away from topping out when the pandemic hit. And my dad called and said, "Hey, I think now's the time. I need you to come back to the business." I wasn't ready to. I was loving where I was at. I was really, really invested in pushing the industry forward in my seat at DPR. And but when family calls, you gotta take the challenge. And glad I did. So came back to the business. Crisis of COVID. Thankfully, people were sitting at home and looking at their windows, so there was a lot of demand. We had a lot of really great people, and we had been experienced a lot of growth, so came in from a high growth culture at one scale to a another business that needed a lot of, was growing, whether they wanted to or not. And, you know, here I am a little over 4 years later and now continuing the growth and development. So.
Yeah, and this, Nathan, before I pass it over to you, it's ironic of like the connections and the threads you make of like the pausing for the cause. Today is about mental health, but it's also the call to action of Action Jackson that we're going to call him here in this whole thing is, is I'm sitting in, you know, the first podcast we did, or the first one was with Denise and the second one with Chad. I'm sitting next to Chad. I think about this dinner there of like where I'm going with this whole thing of setting the stage is you cannot replace this personal interaction. And it's ironic that of this organic nature of like I'm looking across to Jackson, I'm looking across to Denise, and I'm physically seeing all this stuff that now these are all the people that we didn't like choose it that way to interview. It's just this crazy serendipity of where you come from and how the threads all come together through the whole AACE Integration Summit. So I want to turn it over to you, Nathan, and I'm super interested of when I asked him of the first guy I ever met at one of these specialty conferences, he says he does windows and doors. And the question I'd ask you to say, Nathan, is asking him why he attends the AACE Integration Summit when we both do windows and doors that you wouldn't think would fit into DPR people.
Right. Well, and I mean, shoot, I think I could answer that question, but Jackson, I do want to hear yours because I know the audience wants to hear that because I do think you're a definitely a unique breed. I would never say an oddball like myself, but
unique breed oddball.
we're all special in our own way, but yeah, I mean, I guess I mean. Was it ever, you know, difficult, to make that time to, especially within a small business? I think, you know, it's hard enough within large organizations to find time to come to these sorts of external events. Like, is that something that you sort of made a stand when you came to work with your dad? Or, how have you been able to make time to make sure you're connecting externally and not just focusing internally on the company?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, Coming back to Double Hung, I was just coming off the tails of a DPR Shark Tank competition. So I had this real big innovation bug. I was wanting to create and drive and push innovation. And so when I get to Double Hung, we're a small business that's run off spreadsheets and you know, the way we do things. And I was like, we got to innovate. We got to push forward. And the pace at which I was wanting to move and needing to move for me to stay, you know, in my lane, the organization couldn't handle it. It wasn't, you know, I was a wrecking ball coming into a business that needed to change, but wasn't ready to change at the pace that, you know, I needed to drive change. And so, I was looking for an outlet to stay connected with, the innovation community, the bigger, industry as a whole. And that's where I read an article actually about you, Nathan, and I was like, oh, I like this guy. He used to work at DPR, and I learned about the CPC, and I was like, this sounds like a great, great organization. And so, you know, I went to my dad. I was like, I need to be a part of this organization. Like, I felt a calling to come now that I've got this representation from a small trade contractor. I want to be able to channel the challenges of adopting and implementing technology at a small scale and be able to go and sit at the table and interact with people that are doing it at a much larger scale so that voices like ours are not getting lost in the mix when we're looking at how to innovate the industry. Because I think, that calling of I can represent the small people, but also I've had experience at the bigger tables. I just felt drawn, like I had to be there. So if I, you know,
well, and that's why your perspective is so important in that room, right? Because so much of this is, yes, it's going to be the DPRs and the Mortensons and the McCarthys having these conversations about why can't we do this or what if we did that, but it also still has to apply to the smaller guy. And so I think because you now can wear both hats and can give examples with a Double Hung example, I think is all that more valuable. And I think the word I wrote down as you were talking about kind of everything that you've done, and I know a little bit more about the work that you have done to really digitize the organization and really understand like how even as a smaller what I'd call like service provider, you're really productizing a service of what you're doing. And so I guess maybe talk a little bit about how you are taking guys off of spreadsheets, like what are those tactics of doing that and kind of what's driving that?
Yeah. So, when I got here, we were running the business out of QuickBooks. That was essentially our project management software and our accounting software. And so when we're trying to look at the financial, how we're doing, trying to plan and look ahead, there was really a big big bottleneck at my dad. So everybody was coming to my dad because we didn't have a tool that could allow the team that we had in place to manage costs and have visibility into the business. So I did some research and I was like, we have to get some kind of platform, some kind of technology to help us get visibility into the business. And I found our ERP Energy that designed for custom millwork and had some conversations with Mark Sanderson. I was like, I can use this technology to drive not only lean implementation into the business, but give my team the ability to contribute in a better way while we help my dad phase out, because his goal was to retire 4 years ago. So trying to figure out how do we put something in that helps us tie the financial side of the business, connect it with project management, and get us to that next level of being a very small business to maybe a small business. And so I just really kept seeing the bottleneck that was my dad and how people would need information but couldn't take action because it was putting so much on him to have to do. And he was working 60, 70 hours a week. I was like, technology can help us solve this issue, but we've got to buy in. And so we found the right technology, but then when you've got a culture that is used to not having technology and not having, a certain thing, they're going to go back to their habits and the way the things were, because that's culturally ingrained. So technology was one part of our solution, but then also implementing how do we begin to change the culture and improve on the culture in a way that's sustainable and can allow for us to not just rock the boat and lose everybody. So
I want to take one step back because there's so many similarities and you could go back and I could put podcasts or conversations around this to where the key thing I heard from Jackson is I was in this great company doing this, but my dad called and said I needed help. And that is the key thing of like keeping up with the health metrics of like, I'm so glad Jackson said that. And I'm so glad his dad called him and said that. I went through the same thing with my stepfather that raised me when he left the corporate world and started up one of our locations. And he said, here's a deal. I'll give you 5 years, which turned into 8, just like Jackson said. but you set these timelines. But this is the thing we all have to be real about stepping up of saying there has to be a begin with the end in mind. And these things have to flow and change. And the other thing I heard Jackson say is you also said, Dad, I'm here to help, but I'm going to innovate and I'm going to be involved. I'm going to go get outside perspectives to help move this forward to say every business has a process. The problem with most subcontracting businesses, you know what the process is? Go ask Dad, who's been here forever and knows everything. And we have to figure out how to take that tribal knowledge and put it into productizing what your dad did. And that's the stuff that if we don't start doing that, you just get burned out. And then the really unfortunate stuff of a really cool business may go under, or somebody's mental health, or something really bad could happen, right? And that's the part I think we want to need to pause for the cause here to say, that's what we're here to talk about, right? Is how do you pass that baton in this whole thing of like, it's a sprint and a marathon at the same time trying to figure all this stuff out, and that's why you got to meet at the table and have these different discussions and believe in that, right? And technology is the way, but it's the humans, and that's at my lead-in to say, there may be different types of technologies these humans should look at. And at the end of the day, what data is important to drive success?
Yep. We forget which other business we were working with, but we picked this up from, so this is not ours, but we call it IDH now, in dad's head, right? So we got a term for that. So creating that that common language of so IDH, I'm sure if any other businesses with successors are listening. It'll resonate. And I'll before we move on this subject, but coming off of 150 million dollar project, burning hours, 70 hours a week, going through the pandemic, high stress environment. But coming it back into a family business and having the familiar dynamic is the most stressful thing I've ever navigated in my life, because it's a stress level that's completely different than most I've ever experienced. But it also has its rewards. And one of the key stats I learned early on from our succession coach was that founders and business owners that go to succeed to the next generation, when they're going through that process, and this is the process that I'm helping my dad go through, or sometimes forcing my dad to go through, there's been studies that the trauma that they navigate, the loss of I'm losing this part of me, has been measured to be equal to that of losing a child. So when founders succeed their business, they're going through the process many times of as if they're slowly losing a child. And so that trauma, like that, I was fortunate to learn that early on, because I was ready to go push. And I'm seeing all this, we call one of our other teammates that's worked with us calls it violent agreement. We're agreeing that we got to do the same thing, but there's just this natural, tension that exists because, I'm literally having to help navigate and push him through something that may be equivalent as if he's going through the trauma of losing me, right? It's just, it's a wild, wild
but
thing.
But it's so real. Like, and that's the part I don't think we talk enough about when it comes to all these different mental health things of saying, like, you think it's just like, well, they just don't want to let the business go. The whole letting go of the vine is so much bullshit in a lot of ways, because they can't wait to be done with it. He called you because I'm done.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to pass over something that is all in dad's head. And how do we get this to transfer that knowledge, but also transfer the enthusiasm of your dad starting it from the garage to like that passion is really, really, there's a lot of deep stuff there that I've never heard it articulated. It's like losing a child, but like at the end of the day, that's what he spent his whole life doing, spent as much time doing that as he has been doing mentoring you. And then you jump back in the middle and now you have both.
Yeah,
like, that's wild. And I went through the same thing, and we got like, and he was my stepfather, but he raised me, right? And he was also my boss's boss in the corporate world that then came back to work for me. And we had some really, really hard times. Like, it'd be like we'd have to start with a happy hour before we could start talking about it. And then at the happy hour and you start talking about it, it gets kind of tough.
Yeah.
Because you get burnt out of that stuff. So I think at the end of the day, it's ironic we're like kind of going down this path that we always do these pre-interviews and put a lot of focus and planning into these podcasts. This was not discussed at all, but I think it's actually like really all tied back to the same thing of like, if you're mentally not right, how can you either work for or lead a different organization? And quite frankly, I think in the subcontracting world, that's kind of where we're at in construction.
Yeah. And I think to bring it full circle on why I think this is important to bring up and discuss is, so as businesses will get acquired, as trade businesses, the founders of trade businesses, the guys in their 50s, 60s, 70s that have built these great businesses that are the craft workers, by 2030, 30% of them are going to be out. So there's a huge opportunity that, private equity is looking at. How do we roll up these businesses? How do we do that? Because the opportunity is obviously there. But it's not as simple as just numbers on paper. You've got to figure out how to, humanize that interaction and that transaction and help people navigate, because that tribal knowledge that is in the founder's mind, it's not very easy to systematize it and pass it to the next generation. And money is not what motivates these founders. Money is not why they're there. They're in it because they love the craft and they want to transfer that craft to the next level. Money's
well, they,
nice.
They started it for the money and they made it. And now their baby is more important to pass and keep that thing alive in a lot of ways than it is the money, because they're now like, I don't need the money. I want to pass on the legacy, not get another $2 million in the bank account for my little business.
Yeah. And learning to navigate that, going through the stress of that, us going through those violent agreements, the constantly at odds when we're still trying to do the same thing. We mostly agree on how to do things. Like that's where, you know, I saw my mental health suffer a lot, and I still go through it. I mean, it is extremely difficult to know that we need to do something, but not necessarily agree on the same way to do it, and have to push forward knowing that, you know, this is what's right, and what I feel is right. He may not agree with it. The team might agree with it. And it's just having to be stuck in that cycle is the most challenging, probably one of the most challenging outside of, you know, my traumatic brain injury.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you a question about, like, the perspective or I guess maybe the reaction of the field and the craft to your position, again, as the newcomer in a leadership role who is the, you know, founder's son. And again, I'm telling all stories in my head of what they're probably saying. And so, like, I can only imagine your shoes of everything you just talked about of what you are dealing with on a leadership aspect, but then you still have to be the face out to the guys. And so, like, I mean, I know you've developed a lot of tactics. I'm sure that was probably a lot of the mental stress as well. But, like, I guess, yeah, how was that? What did you learn from that about, you know, like, because I know there are a ton of other folks. I will say I was at a Wall and Ceiling AWCI leadership event where there are multiple folks that are those second generation successors that are really struggling with this stuff. So, yeah, any advice that you have to them out there, because you're certainly not alone.
Yeah. Yeah, it was eye-opening. It still continues to be eye-opening because I was, like I said, I was coming from, you know, superintendent role, running a high-performing job site. Like, I mean, lots of action going on. I'm used to just not command and control, but, you know, short time to get answers, quick information flow. And then I'm coming into a business that's really a bunch of artisans. Like, we're not, you know, production. We were never production focused. We'd produce, but I'm coming from high production into an artisan culture. And so the practices and the things that it made me successful on delivering and leading in one environment were causing me to fail and not get adoption in this environment. So I did a lot of observing and trying to understand how can I help us shift to a production mindset while keeping the artisanship alive. That took a lot of, you know, talking with my team, just really trying to understand where people were. It took a lot of resetting expectations, and, you know, some people just weren't going to be a fit long term for the shift that we needed to make to keep the business. Because, you know, again, I was coming into the business in a crisis mode, and at a time they were experiencing significant growth. So you know, and I continue to try to learn how can I lead people that can do work that I cannot do as well as them. So I try to, you know, let them help guide me on what do they need, what tools do they need, what's their perspective, and really build on the perspective and the knowledge that they've spent their lives dedicating their craft to, and how can I challenge them to think about it in a little different way, or how can I provide them with the tools or the support or the benefits that they need to be well and healthy, so that when they come here, they're doing their best work and trying to, you know, not just do the work, but also have a culture and a workplace that they love coming to.
Man, that's amazing. And no wonder I got you connected with Brent Darnell, because you guys are just, yeah, two peas in a pod. But, yeah, I mean, he's built a whole career out of, yeah, like working with craft and kind of working, getting the best out of those guys and getting them the best out of themselves, too. So I know, yeah, we've done some cool stuff recently since the AECI Summit. But I guess, do you want to talk a little bit about what we did in the roundtable following up from the health metrics team?
Yeah. So yeah, in that roundtable, you know, Brent Darnell introduced the simple tool that he uses for how to get people engaged to start talking about their mental health and taking I believe the example he started with was a paint company that he worked with, where, you know, 50% were smokers. They had, you know, a certain culture, and, you know, within, you know, I think it was like 8 months or 9 months of introducing this tool and beginning to plant seeds of vulnerability, you know, people really started being okay talking about their health and talking about how they were doing both physically and mentally. And forgive me for forgetting the exact name of the tool. It was the one that was just 1 to 10, right?
Yeah, 1 to 10, yeah.
You know, when we did that on the round table, it was really cool to see how people dive in when they're given permission to truly share where they're at, and given a simple tool on how to communicate that, how impactful that can be at bringing together a group of strangers, which it did on our call at the roundtable, and you know, seeing the impact of how bringing together a team that's in the muck every day, you know, on a mission to build a job or grow a business, it's something that I intend to begin to introduce into my business, and I need to, because I still remember the feeling I had of vulnerability and sharing that with a group of near strangers on the round table, and hearing the data that Brent has on how it's impacted businesses, bottom lines, through improving their team's mental and physical well-being.
So, Jackson, you're one of the few from the industry side that have been a three-peater that have been to all three of the AEC iSummit so far. I guess what does keep you coming back? Because, you know, most of these conferences just become the same old talking heads, right? have you seen the progression, or what did you like about it?
Going back to the first summit, just really, we were talking about data interoperability and how to connect technology, which is still a key part of the summit, and how to connect interoperability across all the systems to leverage improvement technology. And that stuck with me, because I see it as a huge problem to solve, but it doesn't seem as hard to solve as some people might think. It just takes momentum and shared vision, shared pain, shared gains, right? So after that first one, coming back to the second one, you know, we planted the seeds of talking about, you know, the mental health issue that's plaguing our industry. That's where I first learned about this, really, was at the first AEC summit. Coming back year after year, keeping that conversation alive, but also seeing progress and shared momentum on, we're not just showing up to this conference to talk about it. We're here to actually work and spread out to the industry to keep momentum from this going, which I've seen, seen that moving forward from 3 years ago. So brings me back, because I do feel that the impact is worth the investment, the connections, the camaraderie, the lack of ego, right? Coming out there that it has been able to help me be more productive in my environment and brought tremendous value to me as a leader in my business at a small scale, and just seeing the impact that it's making at a larger scale of connecting these big change makers at these big businesses, but not just doing it for ego or for showmanship. It's truly something special.
All right. So my master facilitator job of in and out of these conferences is to learn all the different volunteers and all the people making the AECI summits all happen. And starting out by giving cred to Aaron Wright of the Construction Channel, who did all this great video last year and made all these little videos of the different threads in the video of keeping up with the health metrics discovery summary, that this one was brought to us by Avocado and Kurt. And so putting these different things together, this next summit, we're going to be the kind of theme of work hard, play hard, and kind of the game show. And so when Nathan was like, we're kind of looking at a game show theme, I'm like, cool, I'm going to take all these videos, and we're going to unpack these videos into a conversation, into each one of these fireside chats. And growing up, one of my favorite things on the game, on these different shows, was the David Letterman top 10 list. So of all these different verticals, from the video, I'm just going to go down 10 down to number one. And Jackson, you just give us kind of a couple words or a thing that comes to mind from spending a few days together at a round table to this video, and takeaways for us to think about and keep these threads coming together to have as much fun as possible. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to do the drum roll here, and I'm going to get it going, and we'll get down to number one. Here we go. Number 10.
We need to develop mental health leading indicators.
Number 9.
We know there's a problem.
Number 8.
We've got to quantify the cost.
Number 7.
We've got to redefine project stakeholder approach to the built environment.
Number 6.
Can we develop a CARES rating?
Number 5.
There seems to be a 30-year cycle of regulation.
Number 4.
ROI exists and is understood with physical safety.
Number 3.
does a higher ROI for physical safety exist than, or for psychological safety exist?
Number two.
We got to improve the livelihood of craft workers.
And the number one answer is?
Solving this issue will positively disrupt the industry.
I love that. And I had to pause there of the CARES rating because we'll put it in the show notes for everyone to go back and watch this video. And if I heard right, we had as much fun as possible the night before, but they did a great job of role-playing this thing. But the CARES rating was one of those things that it was one of my favorite takeaways because they really tried to put a call to action or something from that. I don't know, Jackson, if you remember what the CARES...
Construction assessment regarding emotional state.
Whoa, Nathan's right on it. Boom. So putting those things together, I think, are really important. So I guess maybe unpack that a little bit more.
Yeah. So, you know, put simply, we have figured out a way to measure and track physical safety, the experience modification rating. It's not the best. It's not necessarily the best leading indicator of physical safety for a subcontractor or a general contractor, but there's a connected monetary ecosystem within the EMR that allows us to validate how safe an organization is. And so the CARES rating or something like that is what we've got to develop to fix this this mental health crisis in construction, because we got to put dollars to it. We got to make sure that people can understand, much like investing in physical safety, you can increase production and increase your throughput on a job. You know, my argument would be that we could see 10x returns by following the same and creating the same measurement system and focusing on psychological safety and mental health improvement for our workers.
I absolutely love that. Jackson, thank you for caring and mapping out to say, how do we care? And put it into a rating 7 times for the first time. CARES, construction, assessment.
Regarding emotional state.
I love it. Yeah. So that's the stuff we're now starting to finish each other's words. And that's what I think Nathan's done of like putting the Fireside Chat podcast that he's, and then also at this conference, what Nathan does is he jumps from roundtable to roundtable and is aligning with his magnets and all his cool stuff he's done. He can go all the way back to the first podcast that Nathan and I did. And I think it's really important if you want to jump in and meet the people at the AEC Integration Summit where they are, the more you go back and learn from them, the better off you're going to move this thing forward. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just to be one stop and not be a cog in the wheel, but actually putting those links together, which is easier said than done, right, Nathan?
Well, yeah, and I think that's the whole parallel to everything Jackson was talking about within Double Hung is, you know, taking something that is seemingly impossible to structure or standardize and figuring out, you know, what are the areas where we can be consistent, where we can start to measure and improve. And I think that's where we're seeing every year the use of the magnets and the gears and the databases and the little documents gets more sophisticated. We get better at articulating and moving these items forward. And then we actually, you know, start to see the impacts and things, you know, moving forward. But it is a long road, and it's a slow battle, but we're going to be in it for the long haul. So it's great to have folks like Jackson by our side, and it makes it that much more fun to do.
I love it. Nathan, thanks for letting me jump in on the ride with you here. As the questions we always ask Jackson to close this thing out, as a historic window guy that went to DPR and now back, and thank you for sharing the stories of, it's hard to put the metrics of this stuff on taking over a family business, but we commend you for it, and thank you for opening up and sharing those stories. As we look to the future of breaking through the ceiling and building better buildings, what is that crystal ball that you for the future when it comes to technology and construction?
Great question. So I think, you know, might be counterintuitive or against what most people see, but I think we're headed for a bubble if we can't increase the efficiency in which we're healing the industry and attracting and developing the next generation of workers. There's a lot of great technology, super well intended. It's there to make an impact on increasing efficiency, which is tied to the bottom line of the businesses that operate. But I fear we're not focusing enough attention on how to innovate taking care of our people, because it's a lot harder to quantify the ROI for our owners and investors. So, you know, let's avoid that bubble. Let's put the money into people so we don't lose out on all the money that's gone into the technology. That's the crystal ball I'm looking into.
I love it. Well, make sure you go to the show notes if you want to get more involved. All the stuff is coming out where you can go in and learn more at the about the 2025 AEC Integration Summit and figure out how, whether you want to sponsor as a company, as an individual, have a seat at the table. Nathan is there, and we'll put all the links in there to get involved, and all the social media is out and all that great stuff to stay engaged on all the stuff we're doing, whether you can physically be there or not. You know, there's the FOMO of all this stuff of you can't be at every conference and you can't be everywhere, but you do have to figure out how to have the right mental health. And I think about one shout out as we close this out is Denise has kind of been helping Nathan and I through all these different things. And it's been fascinating. I've been seeing her posts of like, be careful when you're going to these conferences, do this for, you know, all the obvious stuff of drink water and do all this stuff, but look at different ways to just make sure it works for you and have each other's backs. And that's what's really cool about this community, right? And seeing there's a lot more to it than windows and doors. But when it comes to Jax and I, that's what we're all about. And you have to put all that stuff together, right? And so the final question that we always ask of this podcast is for our builders and affiliates to go out there and grow their business every day. Jackson, what is that one thing you want to leave them thinking about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
I would say put time into understanding your culture and how that culture and the team you've got can be put together to invest in their development and creating a better environment for the people that are delivering the most value in your business. Because the more you put into to people and keep them long term, the more they're going to return on helping you grow your business.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the places we're doing that is in the AOC Master Facilitators. And our tagline is, we're not the MFers that you think of in construction. We're the Master Facilitators coming together to build better buildings. And for the next year, we're really focusing in on meeting where Devin is. And that's running a window and door company. So it's taking people that do windows and doors for a living, but I'm really going to challenge them to say, let's bring in some different outside perspectives through this Art of Construction community to take the subcontractors or the riches and the niches and the general contractors, and we have to figure out how to put those humans together, and then the technology and the data exchange is really going to take off. Nathan, closing words for us as we move this thing forward.
I mean, I think that's going to be the theme for the summit in 2025 is that, you know, yes, it's technologists talking about how to integrate data, but really it's a conversation about people and about motivation and about incentives, that if we don't, you know, call a spade, you know, be vulnerable about what our gripes are and what we want out of this and figure out compromise and figure out a way to move forward. All this technical APIs and integration and mumbo jumbo, it doesn't mean anything. And so I think that's the biggest thing out of this is let's get back to basics. Let's figure out how to take care of our people. And then the rest will come from that.
Awesome. What an honor to be on this journey with you, Nathan. Jackson, thank you so much for coming up and sharing your story.
Likewise, guys. I've enjoyed it. It's been great.
Awesome. Crush it out there, tribe.